Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You're listening to Yeah, That's Probably an Ad. This is the Adweek podcast where we talk about marketing, media, technology, pop culture, because in the end, everything is an ad. We've got a lot to pack in today, and so we're going to be jumping around to a few really interesting topics. First one, we're going to be talking about Cannes Lions and their decision to go all virtual for the second year in a row after many decades of being held in the south of France. Then we're going to cover our Media All-Stars roundup this year of some of the biggest names, rising stars, executives of the year in the media agency and media buying and strategy world. And we're going to talk about one of the most fascinating trends to me, which is celebrity-owned, celebrity-backed spirits brands. Aviation Gin, of course, with Ryan Reynolds and Casamigos from George Clooney. There's been so many. We're going to go into that trend with some of our colleagues as well. But for now, first, I want to start out with Stephen Leptak, our UK bureau chief. Stephen, great to have you back to talk all things Cannes and help us figure out what's going on over there. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Grainer. You remember the last time we physically met was in Cannes.
Yeah, I think the only times we've ever met were in Cannes.
That's probably true.
So before we get into the logistics of the delay, and you know, we're not going to spend too much time on this because it's kind of in some ways the same as last year. But last year the decision was somewhat last minute. I mean, not really, but it's like they kind of held the line and then they realized this pandemic's not going away. Things are not going to get better. France especially was very hard hit. But they decided, they made a few decisions then. I don't think they really had a kind of a strong virtual programming strategy at that point. They also just basically delayed the awards. They said, no awards this year, which other award shows ended up pressing forward with that. But before we talk about what they did this year, what would you say is the biggest benefit of being at Cannes, being physically in the South of France for this festival each year?
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt to me. The fact that you have the most important, the most connected people in the industry, client side and agency side, all within a mile of each other, passing each other in the street, catching up for a drink. It's the networking side of Cannes is, I think, irreplaceable. And I think having 2 years without that is probably what hurts the industry the most. It's just so great in terms of networking potential.
You really can't overstate the number of not just people talk about deals that are made, and yes, people find clients there, but I feel like more often people find talent there. Like Cannes is where you secretly squirrel away some time with the creative chief of your rival agency to hire them away to come be your creative chief. Like those are things that just don't happen, you know, unless you all happen to be in the same city. But when you're talking about global creatives, that's where these conversations happen.
Yeah, I mean, not only is it I mean, the opportunity of catching up with people that, first of all, you might never have met or you've only read about, and trying to figure out whether or not it's somebody you want to work with in the future. I can't imagine that Cannes is not responsible for the success of so many people in this industry just for bumping in to their future bosses at the Carlton Terrace or even the Gutter Bar, not that I'm sure many of us go there. It's just the career benefit alone is so significant as well. And yeah, it's the awards everyone's absolutely obsessed by. And I mean, that goes right to the top of the network agencies. They all want to win big at Cannes Lion. But for me, I love being able to talk to people and just see people and catch up briefly.
Yeah, I remember, like, I'm not a big fan of boondoggles in general, which, you know, a lot of people call Cannes a boondoggle. I will say the first year I went, I was like, I'm here to work. I'm not here to party. I'm not here to drink. The reality is that is the work. Like, the work is the getting out there, going to, you realize pretty quickly the parties are not just these raging bacchanals, that it's where you network. For one, they're kind of boring. The parties are generally pretty staid affairs. But you get there and that's where you're just rubbing shoulders with all these people who are literally some of the most powerful brand. And, you know, and even at the Gutter Bar, I've run into CMOs of major global brands where I just like bump into them and introduce myself. And they're like, oh, you know, I'm the CMO of X brand. And it's just like, well, this is kind of weird, but I don't know. Let's chat.
You've been going to the wrong parties, though. I've had some fun.
Some of them are good, but I mean, it's like, you know, if you get invited to, like, you know, the Edelman pool party, it is not going to be like people doing cannonballs or something. It's going to be a bunch of suits standing around drinking rosé and talking about PR strategy. But yes, there are some good ones. So let's talk about, so this year they're going all virtual again. No real shock there. They've created a membership model where if you pay to go, which, what is it? It's £250 or €250? I can't remember.
I think it was $300, so about £250.
Yeah, so $300, you get a one-year membership to the Lions. I think everyone will start to notice that they're starting to say Lions more and can less. Tell us a bit about what you've learned about that.
Well, I mean, they announced, and I've been looking at this for weeks because everyone was skeptical that they could possibly go ahead with what we're seeing happening across Europe in terms of the pandemic numbers again. So we're a lot of people were skeptical, but they insisted they were going to continue. It was going to be in person, and they were going to have to do another year. And when you actually look at the figures of Essential, you can see why. That festival is so significant to the business, and it cost them tens of millions not running it last year. So they were desperate to have it on again this year, but there was just no way, and they couldn't hold back any longer. So what is likely to happen now, from the conversations I'm having, it looks as though they want to build Lions as a brand, almost a media brand, where it's not just dependent on Cannes, one week in Cannes. So it looks as though they're going to try and start creating more digital content, and we can already see that in the daily newsletters they're putting out. And it does seem as though they want to get away from just being referred to as Cannes Lions, which I think we can speculate means they're looking to broaden.
Yeah, and they've been doing this for a few years in the sense of, like, they have Dubai Links and they have these events and they own Eurobest. So they do own a bunch of properties outside of Cannes, but there's been this cachet around Cannes that I think they're starting to realize can also be a liability. And to your point, Essential, the parent company that you mentioned for Cannes, they lost 97% of their event revenue last year. That tens of millions of dollars. It's a staggering amount. So yeah, I would encourage everyone. We've run quite a few stories about this that Stephen and Eric Oster on our agency's team have written in the last few days. So check it out. If you just look up Cannes Lions and Adweek, you'll get all of our coverage. We've got industry response. We've got details on their plans. The only thing we really don't know yet is much about the programming, keynote speakers or anything like that, which I'm a little surprised. I think maybe they kind of had to get out in front of this a little quicker than maybe they intended, because folks like us kept asking questions. But it'll be interesting to see. Thank you, Stephen, for taking time to get us caught up on what's up with Cannes. And like I said, I encourage everybody to check out Stephen's reporting online. And we'll see. Hopefully, we'll all be back in the South of France next year.
Cheers, Greiner.
All right. Take care. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we are back, we'll be back with Co-M, our co-host, Katie Lundstrom, one of our reporters who's been covering the celebrity-owned spirits trend, and also Eric Oster, who I just mentioned is going to join us to talk about Media All-Star. So stay with us. We'll be right back for that. We are back, and that song you just heard, actually, a little musical note playing us back in, is the Adweek sound. This was made by a tool called Massive Bass. Bass is an acronym for something I don't quite remember what, but it's from Massive Music. It was a partnership that they had made with an audio data company, and basically they promised that they can analyze your corporate brand values and then the data behind it and analyze their music library and determine the sound that fits perfectly with your brand. So that is the one they came up with, Adweek. You can read about that tool. Just look at Massive Bass. It's one word, BASS, on adweek.com. Read our colleague Shannon Miller wrote about that whole thing, and you can hear the whole song if you're
How
curious.
Cool.
Yeah, it's neat. And we are back with our co-host, Co-M. Co, so great to have you back and to be back together as a family. It feels weird when we're apart.
Together but apart. Lonely, but never lonely. Never lonely, but never alone. Yes, it is always is good to be with family. I love the Adweek community, and it's good to you know have our colleagues back with us from time to time, just because we are so spread out. So this week we are joined by our senior staff writer of agencies, Eric Oster. Welcome back, Eric.
Thanks. It's great to be back on. Yeah, that's probably an ad executive.
And also from Austin, we have our senior writer, Katie Lundstrom. Hi, Katie.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
Of course. So we're going to get into our Media All-Stars issue, which is out this week. And Eric, you were really at the helm of this week's coverage. So can you set the lay of the land here? I mean, obviously we had an incredibly difficult and weird year. So you looked for people who stood out and helped kind of navigate through this change.
Yeah, and Eric, remind us what when we say media, I always joke that like media means like five different things in the industry. In the industries we cover, like it can mean sound files, or it can mean journalism, or in this case, it can mean the buying and selling of media and media strategy. So, if you can just start by telling us what we look for in a media all-star each year.
Yeah, I mean, I think someone who has, in this case, as Co alluded to. Someone who really helped clients navigate all the challenges that they faced last year. And those clients leaned a lot on media agencies to help them through that, to know when they should be buying media to reach consumers and when they should really put their marketing and advertising on hold and sit tight for a bit. And I think all of our all-stars really made compelling cases for, in one way or another, helping their media agencies do that for clients, whether working with them directly or really helping those agencies evolve their own offerings in a lot of interesting ways as well.
Yeah, I feel like if you can thrive in this past year, then you can thrive anytime. Like, you know, this is like the real cauldron for any, I mean, for every industry, but media. Like just figuring out, I mean, we wrote so much about the collapse of out of home, right? Like, cause nobody was going out of their homes. And then that came kind of roaring back. Experiential, of course, got absolutely battered. I mean, you had to be almost Jim Cramer level, like take all your money out of this and put it all into this. Like you had to be super spry. And yeah, I think it says a lot for anybody who could come out of this past year, actually like proving themselves as a real talent in the industry.
Yeah. And I'd love to hear, Eric, you know, you have a bunch of folks on this list. And what I find interesting is not just, you know, the leader who, you know, has to do his or her job, but, you know, the rising stars who maybe become, you know, whether they're loud or soft-spoken or what, they become the gems, right, that people start listening to, and they continue to have an impact. I'm just always like, whenever I hear about anyone doing anything during the pandemic, I'm just so impressed. So can you tell us about, you know, some of the impressive people that ended up on our list?
Yeah, I'd like to... I think rising star is a great place to start as a category winner. Our rising star was Media Hub's Raquel Wilblin, who last year took on the role of integrated media supervisor, and she, over the course of 5 years, Raquel Wilblin went from being an account assistant to most recently becoming integrated media supervisor at IPG's Media Hub. And last year, in a great example of just how anticipatory media agencies had to be to get out ahead of trends with consumers last year and understand, you know, what was going to happen, what was just starting to happen, rather than reacting to those trends, she worked with Wyndham Hotels and Resorts and led a pivot for them last spring. Initially, I believe they paused much of their planning. She led a pivot for them to target specifically people who are looking to travel closer to home. They were able to ascertain that people were starting to travel again. It would just looking very differently. People taking short road trips, families looking to get away, or people just wanting to get out of the house for a weekend. And they realized it was a point in the pandemic when that was going to start taking off. And it ended up working out really well for Wyndham. And I think the statistic they gave us was that the campaign averaged 10 times more direct conversions, which is a consumer action taken, than the previous campaign they had run. And, you know, certainly you look at a category that just was hit so hard, it's hard to overstate how meaningful that must have been for that brand to be able to do that.
Before we talk about the exec of the year and kind of go to that more veteran end of the scale, you know, I reviewed, like many of us, I reviewed the applicants this year and kind of weighed in on who should be in these all-stars. What trends did you notice, Eric, in terms of like the beyond like adaptability, you know, it's like beyond like the really kind of obvious of navigating change. Did you spot anything in terms of either the waves that media went through over this past year, or just kind of recurring trends of what it meant to be effective at media strategy this past year?
I think that media has been changing a lot in recent years, and I think one of the trends would be just how much of the talent pool we saw submitted and ultimately selected were working through some of those changes, and in many cases kind of reimagining internal structure and capabilities at media agencies. And the other big trend, I guess we maybe only had one or two winners in this area, but was media agencies moving into content creation to further complicate everything.
Yeah, creative agencies want to be media agencies. Media agencies want to create creative, and brands want their in-house teams to do all of the above.
Exactly. So I guess a couple areas, you know, it would be new or rising in importance areas like e-commerce, analytics, and in that case also content. One of our winners was Starcom's EVP head of content, Al Haas. I don't know that we've had a head of content as a media all-star before. I may be wrong there.
Let's jump to the big one. Who was our media executive of the year?
Our media executive of the year was Sasha Savick. And He is MediaCom's US CEO and has been for around 9 years now. So, you know, certainly has had quite the run there. The MediaCom was also Adweek's Media Agency of the Year recently. And certainly, I don't think anyone would question that Sasha played a really important role in that as US CEO. I should say Global Media Agency of the Year, but the contribution of the US side of that was a big part of that.
Yeah, so I think this was the hardest choice we had to make, right? Was the Executive of the Year, which I remember going into it assuming it would be like a Hunger Games situation and that it would just be whoever survived. I literally went into this process thinking, just whoever barely made it through, whoever had the least blood, that was kind of how Agency of the Year was, right? For this past year, it was like who lost the least. Now, in the end, our U.S. Agency of the Year, Martin Agency, had, I think, 30% growth. So there were exceptions, but generally across the board at the agency level, at the brand level, it becomes a war of attrition, right, of who can lose the least. But in the end, it was like a pretty tough fought thing. So, I mean, that really says a lot about, I think some years I've wondered, how valuable are these top level leaders? Like when it really comes down to it, like, are they just filling a seat and their underlings are getting all the work done? Or are they actually really kind of leading, like really actually driving the decision making? And in this case, it seems like they were. This was not a year you could have been a casual CEO.
I don't think you could have been a casual CEO when your clients are calling you every single day and your employees need direction and reassurance that their jobs are still going to be there. That was one of the things we noted about MediaCom in their Media Agency of the Year entry, and Sasha played a large role in that, was guaranteeing early on during the pandemic that there wouldn't be a round of layoffs in the US the way we saw with a lot of other agencies. I believe globally MediaCom did have some, but they were able to avoid those types of wide-scale cuts in the US. And in fact, they were even able to grow their workforce by 2.5%, MediaCom US, which for 2020 is just really impressive.
Yeah, and new business-wise, right? They, I mean, it's some pretty massive numbers there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as a member of the leadership team, contributing both to US and to some of the global wins, that was a big part of this as well. MediaCom was the top agency for new business last year, according to Convergence. And in the US, they performed very well as well.
I'm going to pretend to know all these details here, but instead I'm just reading from your article, but it was like 1.6 yeah. billion in new business revenue.
Whew. Yeah,
and
that's
then
right.
587 million of that in the US. Like that's a hard fought year. And just like, it's funny to think back to those days right at the beginning of quarantine, like a year ago, I guess, as we record this, of everything being sold out. So right. Like either, imagine you're a brand, you probably have one of two problems. No one can buy your product because like people can't literally get out to purchase it, or your product is sold out worldwide and you can't keep up with the supply and you can barely even advertise it because you don't know when you'll have enough like actually on shelves. Like what a weird time. Like what a wild like period to be in media. Like I've always earnestly thought media, I don't know. Maybe this sounds offensive. I thought they had one of the easier jobs at marketing just because a lot of it's based on annual strategies and annual calendars. And it felt like once you have that in motion that you don't have to be super adaptive. And this was a case where, yeah, wild, wild year. So to do all that, navigate all that, and still pull off, you know, basically 600 million in US new business win.
Right, right. And the unqualifiable thing almost – that you pointed out to that jumped out to me was the fact that he was able to keep some sense of positive culture, right? So I think as a leader, he not only rolled up his sleeves, as you reported, but you know, he was able to kind of really stand for something.
It's a fascinating list. There are many people on this list of media all-stars this year, and so we cannot do justice by all of them. I encourage everyone, check out adweek.com. Just look for media all-stars. You'll find it. And our roundup of Eric and many of our other staffers have been interviewing these folks and writing profiles of them. So check out all those and get to know a lot of people who managed challenge and change in an incredibly tough year. And congrats, Eric, to making it through this. This thing is a Herculean effort to put together every year. So thank you so much.
Of course.
Co, I don't know about you. I could use some booze.
Yes. Not really. Or culture. maybe a celebrity meme. I don't know. We'll talk about all of that. Why don't we take a break, take a sip of something, and then we will be back with Katie Lundstrom. Probably heard of these brands that we're going to bring up, right? Ciroc, Skinny Girl. Yeah, and you probably know that they have celebrities at their helm. So to talk more about that and how that celebrity alcohol space is changing, we have Katie with us. Hi, Katie. What's going on with celebrities? They are really getting into spirits.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I was getting these pitches, right, about celebrity alcohol brands. And obviously, like you said, we know some of these brands pretty well. Most people know that George Clooney had a tequila brand and that he sold it for a lot of money. Well, maybe you don't know the part that he sold it for a lot of money, but, you know, we're seeing these names come up. If you pay attention to adweek.com, you probably know that Ryan Reynolds owned Aviation Gin until recently when he sold it for a good chunk of cash to Diageo. And I mean, there's loads of other ones. I mean, just this year, Travis Scott partnered with Anheuser-Busch to launch a new agave-based hard seltzer that's tequila-inspired. So more and more people are getting into this business. So I wanted to kind of reach out and see from experts whether or not that's really really a trend that's accelerating or just something that I was perceiving. And it's definitely, I mean, all of the experts I spoke with said that, yeah, it's getting increasingly crowded. It's not just me. There actually are a lot of celebrities trying to get into the alcohol game. And they all did kind of point back to George Clooney with Casamigos. George Clooney founded Casamigos with two partners in 2013, 4 years later, sold it for $1 billion, which obviously caught a lot of people's attention. So, I mean, it was really just months after that Ryan Reynolds bought Aviation and sold that to Diageo in a deal worth up to $610 million last year. That depends on whether or not, you know, they keep selling as much as they have been, and he still stayed on as creative lead. But yeah, it's kind of wild how many folks are getting into the game. I mean, there are some who've been around forever, you know. I mean, Skinny Girl was actually one of the first ones. Bethany Frankel launched that brand in the late 2000s before a lot of folks were really... before a lot of celebrities were doing anything other than just like a cameo in ads or, you know, being a spokesperson or something like that. But it's really kind of shifted to be so that celebrities have more control over these brands.
Right. And we kind of brought this up with, you know, our colleague Terry T.L. Stanley about celebrities with cannabis, right? And how celebrities now have apparel brands. Now celebrities are investors. And I feel like they definitely don't just want a financial stake in this, right? Because it's like, oh, look at this. I can turn this around eventually. But they want to really be there from the beginning. They're not just going to sign on. Like, I think Matthew McConaughey has one where, you know, he even directs all the shoots. Mm-hmm. So it's really... I'm kind of wondering what's going to happen next, if there's like some kind of bubble that's going to burst.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I talked with a couple of folks who felt like, yeah, it's definitely getting too crowded, like that there are going to be some losers. And I mean, there always have been, right? If we didn't hear about them, they didn't do very well. But like there's likely not enough space on the shelf for as many brands as are being launched right now. So it'll be interesting to see kind of which ones are able to have that staying power and maybe have that. One of the lawyers that I talked to for this piece actually worked with Ryan Reynolds and George Clooney and Travis Scott on the business deals in the background of all of this. And he said, you know, he calls that selling the brand to a big conglomerate like Diageo or Anheuser-Busch, the happy liquidity event. So not everybody's going to have that day. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see which ones work.
I mean, what's interesting to me is that we're not talking about, a gin called Ryan Reynolds gin, or, you know, it's like none of them, these are all investments, right? And then their celebrity becomes the marketing. And I think that's where, you know, you saw that somewhat with Clooney, way more so with Reynolds. And then now it's becoming this pretty standard thing. I think they normalized it so much of not just being quasi entrepreneurs or being, acquiring companies or taking these ownership stakes or controlling stakes, but you're not seeing their names on it. And I think as you know, I'm in my 40s, and so I have seen like the full wave of these things of celebrity endorsed products back in the 80s were just laughably terrible and embarrassing, you know, for these celebrities when they would slap their name and their face on stuff. And so it went away, and kind of like filming commercials as a celebrity, right, became gauche. It became like a thing that you only did in Japan and that you tried to hide away forever. And small world, the celebrity who changed all that, at least in my mind, is George Clooney. Mm-hmm. George Clooney stopped, like he started making ads for Nespresso. In Europe and then eventually in America, and he normalized it. And now you see folks in commercials all the time. But I think it's like we ran a piece recently about a video that Ryan Reynolds made with Diddy and Beckham, David Beckham, and each of them owns a liquor brand, and none of them are called anything by their name. I wouldn't have known that they owned these things. Like Diddy owns De Leon tequila, Beckham owns Hague Club whiskey. You know, it's just, it's interesting that they're not putting their name on mm-hmm. it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is interesting. One of the folks that I talked to who's working with Post Malone on Maison Number 9, a rosé brand that's launching their second batch this summer, he kind of tied it to a, like, generational appetite for more authentic branding and... I mean, obviously, that's his pitch as someone who's invested in one of these brands. But I thought that was kind of interesting to look at it through this sort of generational lens where, like, young consumers aren't so much concerned with, like, okay, this person has sold out and is now a part of the business. They think, okay, this celebrity who I like is really truly vouching for it because they've put their money into it, which is just an interesting perspective, I thought.
I mean, like 1 year ago, I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was something called quarantine wine that I ordered last April. It was it's promoted by Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis. They had reached out to their friends who have a winery in Oregon, and they basically made like this quarantine wine that, you know, would also go like give relief efforts to people who need it, like PPE and families on, in really hard hit areas. So I think like that's happening. And then like, I'm just waiting for the likes of Lizzo to like even create her own coconut water. You know, it's like she was the face of like some, liquor brand, but it's like, mm-hmm. I think it people would be interested to see, you know, someone like her have something that's not called, you know, Lizzo's lemon spritzer or something. It would be, you know, like something else that she wouldn't even put her name on. So yeah, that's definitely a shift.
And there's definitely space for a lot more room and to get into this business. It's so predominantly male. I mean, it's pretty white, but it's very, very male. Aside from, you know, there are a few celebrities who have wine brands, but none of them that have gotten very big, and no spirits brands. So hoping to see more women celebrities get into the spirits business if this continues to be such a booming space.
Yeah, I don't want George Clooney to have like the first celebrity sake. I'm gonna be like, no.
I there's such this machismo, right, about this the current era of this celebrity booze brand. It's like I always picture, whether it's Reynolds or any of the David Beckhams, they're all just like sitting there, like, you know, lounging back in the chair with elbow out. And it's just like, I mean, maybe machismo is not the word, because it's not like they're, you know, out there living some kind of male stereotype. But I do think you're right that there's just this certain kind of swagger to male swagger vibe that
for sure
is getting a little old. You know who I don't think gets enough credit? I was just trying to look it up to remember what it was called. Danny DeVito. Does anyone know Danny DeVito's alcohol brand?
Oh, I saw this as I was reporting, and now I'm blanking on it.
It was a while ago. We wrote about it. I think it was 2010. It looks like we wrote about this. Danny DeVito's premium limoncello. He made a limoncello, and like the marketing for it was so sincere. I went into it assuming it was like a joke. But his whole point was that he just loved limoncello, and it really bothered him that there weren't many limoncellos out there. I personally find limoncello pretty gross, but like, you know, that's what I mean. It's like, I think Danny DeVito was rocking the limoncello. Where are these other really innovative spirit? But now that said, I have no idea financially how much benefit that had for him versus, you know, just being in Always Sunny. But
Yeah, I mean, I guess the last thing that I'd say about this is that I spoke with Christine Nordholm, who's a marketing professor at Georgetown, just to kind of ask her about, like, are we seeing, like, is this like a pendulum swinging? Or, you know, are we going to see it like swing back, you know, so that celebrities are moving away from financially investing in these kinds of brands? And her take was that, no, this is like a power shift, like a real power shift toward celebrities, where they're kind of realizing that if they, you know, put their name into a good product, they are, you know, there is more risk there, but if it does really well, they can come back and ask for more money, or, you know, like, they have a lot of power there if their identity is wrapped up in the brand. And she was saying that, you know, with these kinds of power shifts, they don't generally just like slide back. You kind of, it moves that direction, and then it kind of stays there because people have realized that, yeah, this is a big opportunity. And I actually do have the power. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, David and I will need to make our moonshine.
Yes. There you go.
trying to think, like, what is the ad week easy pun for it? There's got to be one. So you can tell us what booze we should create. I will say that some friends of mine tried opening a distillery, for those who've ever been curious. What a nightmare. Like, I open a brewery is my recommendation before you, or because distillery, I don't know, maybe this varies by city or whatever, but like our fire marshal ended up saying that they had to have explosion proof walls because alcohol is explosive. Oh, wow. Like, you know,
is that in Alabama?
Just it ended up, Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so it was like millions of dollars.
Oh, wow.
To just in real estate versus a brewery. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have explosion proof walls to start making beer. And so it's just one of those where, like, I thought that was fascinating following the process of someone trying to open one. I would say if you've got hundreds of millions of dollars sitting around, as most of us do, just go buy a brand, man. Find that one. Find that Aviation Gin. Go buy it up and sell it to Diageo for 600 mil. it helps to be famous already. So, you know, it's like Ryan Reynolds has talked a lot about it. He spoke at Brand Week at our event last year saying that he's like, my celebrity only helps in the sense that it is media. It is a media channel. Mm. You know, I have access to millions of people that I can put these ads in front of, especially if I put myself in the ads. But on it, he doesn't always. I would say it's maybe like 50% of the ads he puts himself in. You know, it was really just a visibility thing. So, you know, so you can get it out there without having to spend a ton of money. So it does require a certain level of fame. I don't think it's just savvy investment. Because, you know, it's like there's always stories about rock stars from the 80s and 90s who invested in, like, bought Apple when it was $5 or whatever. And that's where they made their real money because they snorted the rest or whatever. And so I think now it really requires having that marketing savvy too. Mm-hmm. But Katie, thanks so much. And everyone should check out your story on adweek.com. It's a great read and definitely a trend. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see more of this before we see less.
For sure.
All right. Well, we're out of time. We packed a lot into this week's episode. Co, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being here. And I hope everything's going okay. I am in like severe Adweek coworker withdrawal. You know what I mean, Co? Like it's been so long.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're like in stage gazillion of pandemic burnout. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's my birthday month. But yeah, I'm here, and I'm happy to be part of the fam.
Yeah. Well, congrats to everybody for making it through this past year. Woo-hoo! It's been, I mean, not to say it's over. I'm one shot into my vaccine, so
same.
I feel like it's like we're in this weird hybrid of like I can almost see it. But yeah, we're getting there. So congrats to everybody. It's been a hard, long road, and we've all kind of helped each other get there. So with that, on that note, it's been a great conversation. Our theme music is by Home. This week's episode was produced by Nick Gardner and edited by Lane McGibney. If you've not already, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Those reviews mean a lot to us personally, and they help new listeners discover the show. You can reach us anytime at podcast@adweek.com. It's podcast@adweek.com. Don't forget to send us your suggestions on what kind of booze Co and I should make and reap our millions of dollars on. It's going to be great, so let us know. podcast@adweek.com. For Adweek, I'm David Greiner, and we will be back next week.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.